Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Comedy is provocation. Truth, catharsis. Whether it's just one or all of those things at the same time depends on the era, the subject, and the approach. But I'd say that comedy, by making us laugh, is always a gift because it helps us feel fully human by reminding us that it's okay to laugh, even in the toughest times. Perhaps no one knows that better than veteran satirist Samantha Bee. Before launching her own show in 2016, Samantha was a pivotal voice on Comedy Central's The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. She did that from 2003 to 2015, setting a record for the program's longest-serving correspondent. From politics to gender and race, she's tackled it all and continues to do so on her TBS show, Full Frontal. So this hour on Point, we'll talk about 2020, about satire, with Samantha Bee. And she joins us now from Westchester, New York. Of course, as I mentioned, she's the host of the Emmy-winning show Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. She's also host of the new podcast, Full Release. Welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much. It's a complete delight to be here. Oh, so, I appreciate you having me on.
It's great to have you. You've been keeping busy. This pandemic hasn't slowed you down at all.
Yes, well, that is true. I have actually been very busy. That is a blessing. It allows me to not have to think about things.
Okay. Don't we wish we all could do that? And frankly, I don't actually believe you.
Yeah, about no, not thinking you shouldn't about believe things. Me. That is made up. That was a lie. Not true.
Okay, so listen, what I want to do here for a second is I just want to play a little bit from full frontal because you've been doing it from home for a while from your backyard. And one of the things that you've done on the show is you've virtually hosted musical guests from your shed. But let's listen to what happened last week regarding that shed.
Listen, it's no secret that 2020 has been unbelievably tough. But one thing that has brought me so much joy is inviting incredible musicians to play music from the shack at the back of my house. Tonight is no exception. So, folks, may I present to you, without further delay, the final two remaining Beatles, Sir Paul McCartney and Mr. Ringo Starr. Oh, my God! What happened to my shed? Why is there a tree on top of my shed? Oh, 2020 sucks so bad.
Yes, it does. What happened to your shed?
Well, we have quite a large backyard, and the very back area is quite forested, and we have a woodshed back there. So we've been using it as this great location for the show, and we had a huge storm about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, and we went back there to film something there, and the shed was obliterated. I mean, like, it was flattened. An entire huge tree just fell on it, pancaked it, and all you could really see was the little peaked roof kind of sticking out from underneath this massive tree trunk. Like, the entire landscape of the back area completely changed with that storm. Just ridiculous. You can't, right?
Like, you can't, literally, that's the thing. Like, you can't make this up.
I cannot.
At what point in time you're like, okay, 2020, I'm done. Like, I've nothing left here.
I'm ready to move on is all I'm saying. When we were going back there, my husband went back first and he was like, you're not going to believe what I'm about to show you. This is going to look like an alien landscape. And I was like, what is going on? And there it was. There it was in a nutshell, 2020, a tree on top of a part of my house. Thank you. Anyway, it's a different type of location.
Have you heard that news that astronomers say that a meteor is going to come really close to planet Earth with it, like a day before the election?
You know, as I'm waiting for these hurricanes to collide in the southern part of the United States and now an asteroid, I saw the headline and then I didn't read the rest of the story. I have to confess. I'm not here for this one. There's so many other. Oh, I mean, but of course.
You're forgiven. Yeah.
Thank you.
I know, exactly.
Thank you.
When I saw that same headline, I was like, yeah. Okay.
Isn't an alien life form just scoping us out? Hopefully they reject us. Hopefully they take a big, broad look and go, you know what? Let's come back and let's come back in a couple of months and see if it's
let's check in
worth capturing.
Hey, so I'm still thinking about your poor shed here.
Sure.
What has it been
R.I.P.
like
shed.
Doing
Thank
the
you.
Show? Well, R.I.P. shed. What has it been like doing the show from home, from your backyard?
Well, it has really been a journey. I'm certainly glad that we chose to do it this way. It's been really tough. It hasn't been easy at all. I think we found our rhythm with it, and that definitely took a little while. You know, my main goal was to kind of create continuity with the show. We just didn't have a studio to go into. Our studio closed, our office building closed, our studio space closed. My apartment is pretty small. There really was no real alternative in the moment but to come back here, but to retreat here and see if we could even consider making a show back here. I'm very lucky that my husband is a television director and a television producer, and he's very capable, and he really understands lighting. The decision to do it in the backyard was largely governed by the fact that we didn't really have any lights to hang. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a grid to hang them on. You know, lighting is kind of everything, and the best lighting that you can get is the lighting of the sun. So we have to position ourselves at certain points during the day as the sun moves across the yard. It's a very it's very integrated with the natural world right now.
Oh wow. I never thought about that. Like you're moving with the sun.
Wow. Correct. Okay. Because there are just certain points that it hits during the day and the light is too stark. You know, I like a nice bounce of golden light from the sun's rays, but you don't want that like really severe top lighting. So you kind of have to position yourself in a certain way. And we shoot it on an iPhone. This is not a commercial for iPhone, but we actually just do on an iPhone 11. It might even be a 10.
That is amazing.
Looks good. Looks really good.
Yeah.
Well, what's prettier than nature? And we're watching the seasons pass. Looking excited. I'm looking forward to the autumn when the leaves start to change, and then it will just be barren after that, which, you know, feels on point.
Apropos. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Feels on point. So, but can you take me back to when, tell me the story of what happened when you and your staff realized that you weren't going to be able to do the show in the studio anymore. And the reason why I ask is because everyone in this country went through a moment like that when they were like, okay, things are going to be really different. I just wonder what that was like for you.
Well, it was, you know, that week, that period of a few days, mid-March, I think we were shooting, I think it was March 11th. It was the Wednesday of that week. And our studio and offices straddle West 57th Street. So our offices on one side, studios on the other side. And normally we kind of migrate over to the studio on a taping day. And most people are kind of across the street and we're working busily on the show. So while we were over there prepping for the show and rehearsing, our office building started to close down because there were confirmed cases of COVID, I believe, on the floor above our office and possibly also the floor below. But I might just be embellishing the story to make it better. I don't remember what is reality anymore. Anyway, it was in the building. And so they began to evacuate floors of the office building that kind of sandwiched ours. And I did not know that. There were certainly producers at the show knew that, but they didn't want to tell me because they didn't want to panic me, knowing that we were going into a taping of the show. Not that I'm a panicky Pete, but you know, it's unsettling. And so as we were taping the show, we determined that morning that we would not have an audience. We'd already made that decision because obviously the news was rolling out. It didn't feel safe. It didn't feel like the right decision. So we called it very early to not have an audience that day. So we taped to, you know, we had staff members in the populating the seats somewhat, a few people there, but I performed the show to a mostly empty house, which was fun because we were all in it together and the writers wrote jokes and I consented to not read them beforehand so that I could also find joy in the experience. So we were all kind of scrambling to find joy in this very panicked situation. And while we were taping the show, the studio side started to close down. So there were confirmed cases of COVID in the studio, and they were shutting that building down around us as we were just kind of squeezing out the last pieces of the show, which we also did not know. So when we finished taping, the building had been closed and evacuated, and we were kind of among the last people in the building, and they were like, please get out. When we finished, they were like, pack your things and go. Please, no lingering conversations. Great job. Get out.
Wow.
And so at that moment, the reality was very clear, and it was real for whoever was left in the office. It was just like, grab whatever you think you might need to do the show. Grab your laptops, basically, is the truth. Grab your laptops, grab whatever you need. Who knows where we will be tomorrow? We definitely will not be in the office until at least Monday. So Monday was kind of the goal. Like, who knew what the world would look like? And my kids attend New York City public schools, and it was a bit of the same situation. Like, we really just did not know if school was going to happen on Monday. So we retreated. So we grabbed, I packed my apartment. I packed like a small suitcase of a few necessities. I don't know why my husband and I really had this kind of intuition that we might have to shoot some stuff up at the house, but we did. Mm-hmm. So the bag I packed was thoroughly ridiculous. Just blazers and high-heeled shoes. Like, I'm just so dumb right now thinking back on it. Like, no food, no actual necessities, no clothing. Just like a shiny, just some really pretty blazers and a whole lot of makeup and hairbrushes. And so we left. We came up here, and then we settled for a couple of days and really considered, like, should we attempt to shoot stuff? And we did end up shooting stuff, and it turned out to be a proof of concept that we could make the whole show. And that's what we did.
And here we are 5 months later. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, so we just have to take a quick break for just one minute here. We're talking with Samantha Bee this hour. She's host of Full Frontal with Samantha Bee on TBS. We're talking about comedy, about satire, about the role of all that in the middle of this extremely challenging year for us all. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. I'm talking this hour with Samantha Bee. She's host of the Emmy-winning show Full Frontal on TBS. She's also in the podcasting game as well. And we're talking about her career, about comedy, and about this moment for all of us in American history. Now, Sam, before the break, when you were telling the story of how the studios got shut down in New York City. I have to admit, it was, as I was listening, I was like kind of on the edge of my seat because it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I'm like imagining like lights shutting down on floors above you and below you, and then like the creeping darkness, coming into around the studio, because basically, we're smiling now, which I'm grateful for. But what you were describing was what was happening to New York City. Right.
And
New York City was on the precipice of a horrible, horrible time. Right.
Horrible.
And people were dying, essentially. And so, so I guess what about then? And then you go up to your house and come up with this proof of concept for the show. Was there a moment where not even your staff, but you internally yourself were like, is this the right time for comedy? What am I supposed to do? How do I do this?
Yeah. Oh my goodness, of course. I mean, certainly, you do kind of, because you make a comedy show and this is our job, but we are also you know, all of us who work at the show, we're also citizens of the world and residents of New York City, a city that we love. And everybody was so, we're all so upset and have continued to be upset and continue to feel tremendous anxiety. It's been terrible. I certainly considered, we definitely took the show, the week off. I mean, we certainly put the show on pause for a week just to get our footing. It's not like we woke up on Saturday and went back at it. Let's make some comedy. But we definitely, you know, we took a show off the schedule and sat with the information and then went, okay, honestly, I'm such a like Catholic school student in some ways. Like, I'm just like, okay, well, this is our job. Get back to work. Like, let's create, you know, some certainty for the, for our staff. Like, it's not like I woke up and went, okay, I can solve all the problems of the world, but I did absolutely have an eye to the fact that I could solve one thing in this world, which is to keep people employed. Because, you know, the possibilities, once you go off the air and you really go off the air, it's really hard to start up again. So I thought, okay, if we can do one thing, maybe we can keep everybody working, give everybody a point of focus. And so that really became the effort. It really was like creating a show wasn't about, you know, standing on a rooftop and being poetic about what's going on in the world. It really was like, how can we do one thing that affects the lives of these incredible, talented 70 people and just give us one thing that we can hold on to in all of this chaos? And so we started shooting gently, just my husband and I in the backyard. We just, we shot this thing about like living in the woods. Like, I guess we're forest people now. This is, how do you chop wood? What if you have to make a fire? And it really worked, you know, it really worked. And even the, you know, even the network, we had to kind of, we had to prove that we could shoot something that looked broadcast quality ourselves. It's a totally different way of approaching just the technical aspect of our work. And then getting everybody working from their homes, because everybody is working from home. And this is not normal life for people. All the writers are working from, literally everyone is. So the process of really building the show and bringing it together is very, very different now.
Right. You know, hearing when you said just try to find one thing to do.
Just one
that's
thing.
Good and helps people and you can hold on to. That's, I think that's really quite moving and powerful. Like, all of us ought to try to like find one thing. I can't believe I'm about to say this out loud, but not that long ago, because you know, we're all at home all the time, I finally got around to watching Frozen 2 with my kids. And the
That's
part
great.
Where they're talking about, like, just do the next right thing. I was in tears. Like, literally, I was in tears. My kids are like, what is so moving? I was like, no, you have no idea. Like, that's just what we need to do. We just need to do the next right thing right now.
Sometimes you just literally need to put one foot in front of the other foot. And so keeping the show going was like our version of that. I mean,
well, you've also, and at the same time, though, you've also done some really innovative things, okay, with the show. So I do want to talk about that. Like, there, in every crisis, there's an opportunity.
Yeah, right.
You got four Emmy nominations this year, including one for your pandemic video diary series.
I'm so proud of this digital series. I have to tell you, I'm so proud of the show. I mean, our writers are incredible. They have a nomination. I'm so proud of our digital team who pulled together this. It really is a diary of how to build a show during a time like this. And we interviewed so many people who work at the show and they're talking about their experiences. I think it's really great. I think it's great.
Yeah. Well, so can I just play a little clip here of one of them
please.
From episode 5 called Keeping Things Tight? And you, folks, you're about to hear Samantha Bee and Alana Harkin, a co-executive producer and correspondent for Full Frontal. And they're going to give us a little bit of a behind-the-scenes look at how part of the show comes together.
Cold opens.
They're like a whole operation. Wardrobe and multiple cameras.
They required so much planning.
Often celebrities do them.
Hi, tiny Gloria Steinem.
It's all right, don't be afraid.
We're all witches.
There was a huge crew, there was production, and now it's me, Sam, and Jason.
Now, in there, you heard the voices of Sigourney Weaver and Alice and Janney mm-hmm. as well. So, mm-hmm. can you tell us a little bit about the diaries?
Yes, the pandemic video diaries go from department to department in the show, or sort of like it's built through the creation of the show. So we talk to the head writers, and we talk to the head of the field department, just every the executive producer team, the digital team, everybody's there to talk about what their process is like, and they're incredibly funny. They're incredibly talented people. It's actually so funny because I watched the series after it was made, and I cried watching it because I'm like, all these people I love, we only see each other, you know, we only see each other in these weird Zoom meetings. So it actually was kind of emotional for me to watch. And it's also a nice opportunity for me to step out of the way and have everybody speak for themselves. I really do love that as well. It's really worth seeing. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think I firmly believe we will get to the other side of all of this. So when
I
that
do.
Happens.
Also, yes.
Do you think you're going to go back into the studio permanently, or there's some things, some changes that might stay with the show?
Well, we will go back into a studio setting. There's no question. We will do that. I mean, that will make all of our lives easier. Because our process is so, we have to shoot the show a day before it airs now, which is not how we normally do it. Mm-hmm. That's a little bit different. We will go into a studio. It remains to be seen what the condition of our current studio is. That, you know, our situation is different from a lot of other shows who kind of own their own space. So they're the only show in that space, but our studio space is a shared space, shared by many other shows. One of the other shows we actually share the space with is John Oliver's show. So there mm-hmm. are shows every day taping in there. And so we don't really have any, we don't have any purview. We don't have any control over the space. And the people at the CBS building are incredible, but it would be better for us to own a space before we really even consider doing that. Listen, the weather's about to get bad. We definitely have weather-related issues out here all the time. We have, environmental issues. Last week, as we were taping, my neighbor literally started working a wood chipper, and it was so loud. And he's pretty far away. It's not like it was 5 feet away from me or anything, but a wood chipper is a violent machine, and I really don't feel comfortable. I have no right to ask him to not turn his wood into chips. Trees fell on everybody's homes. I'm not interfering with his process. So I really just had to hold for that. It'll be comfortable and easier for us to work if we at least have a space that we kind of govern. A lot of our processes will work better. Right now, our editors are working from their dining room tables. I mean, we're all kind of having that same experience that people out in the world are having. Mm-hmm. And school's about to start again. So those of us with children are going to, you know, to some degree, be back partially homeschooling. So, you know, reintroducing that challenge will be, you know, we're all kind of
We will need your comedy to get through that. Oh. I'm telling you now. I'm going to need it. I'm going to need the comedy.
We get a real doozy for you. We have a very funny show tonight, actually. It's a real doozy. I'm really proud of it. It's a good one. It's a good one if you woke up today feeling just bereft about the RNC. This show's for you.
Well, have you felt that, I mean, we'll talk politics in a second, but
sure.
One last thing about this pandemic. It is mm-hmm. so all-encompassing, right? It's historic. Yes. It's incredibly tragic. Mm-hmm. There's so much loss, et cetera. I mean, I could go on and on and on.
Yes.
Have you felt that in the midst of all that, though, that comedy actually serves a really particular purpose for folks?
Well, I always retreat from the argument that like satire itself is so important in the world, but I do actually, like, I don't think that it really changes. I don't think that comedy really changes outcomes, but I do, it is important to me and always has been important to me as a place of communion with others who like kind of feel the same way you do, or just a, and that idea of catharsis is vital for me. It's vital for all of us who work at the show. I honestly don't know what we would do if we weren't doing this type of comedy. I'm not sure. I'm not sure we wouldn't be doing it just in the mirror, you know?
Yeah.
It is having, getting to watch someone or getting to participate in something where you just go like, I'm not the crazy one. This is awful. This is awful. And there are people like me who agree that we need this every once in a while. You need to just go, you need to blow off steam. Just need to blow off steam. And then you can reset. So maybe that's the purpose it serves. It's just like a little reset button for your brain. I'm happy to be a part of that. If you like, if our 21 minutes provides anyone with that sense of catharsis, then I'm just like, I'm good to go. That's great. Hope so.
You know what really great satire comedy is really has just, just speaking for myself, what it's
sure.
also done for me is that it's just, it's a reminder, maybe mm-hmm. reset's the right word, but I'm thinking like it's a reminder that, oh, we can also laugh, right? Like in the middle of all this difficulty, we still have mm-hmm. that part of ourselves that like we just laugh and come together and just, and have a moment of joy.
We
and
have to have, the caveat to every conversation right now is, the world is absolutely tragic. And so, you know, knowing that, you do have to be a multifaceted approach is required. Like when you watch a movie that is only sadness or only tension, it's too much. You just need a moment of bright. You don't even need to laugh, but you do need a temperature change. You know what I mean? You gotta like, you need some dynamic variety to your day. Just it's very helpful. Highly recommend.
Yeah. I mean, I'll have my Dylan Thomas moment and just rage against the dying of the lights.
Sure.
I'm gonna rage through laughter. I'm gonna rage through laughter. So we're gonna switch gears here because let's talk about being funny in politics.
Oh.
Because you mentioned the RNC, and of course we had the DNC last week, and I have to say I'm telling this to the world now as a journalist, but I have always thought that regarding those conventions, not political coverage overall, but those conventions specifically, every 4 years, the only true journalism is what you and your fellow comedians have done.
It does feel
through
like
satirizing
a
them.
I mean, it's obviously the, you know, the world is tragic, yes, but it is weird to not be at the conventions this year. I'm having, you know, we're looking back at old footage that we got in 2016. And I do feel like it's such a, there are always these circus-like atmospheres, and it's just like the most amazing backdrop for comedy and just really pushing people's buttons. And I do really miss that. I mean, of course it's not happening this year. And we are gathering on Slack, our communication platform at work, and kind of, and blowing off steam together as a staff, honestly, you know, doing all the things we would be doing in person, but on Slack, it's very different, still vital.
Can I just jump in here for a second? Because I want to play a moment from what I thought was one of the best moments of the 2012 RNC, a thousand years ago, back when people were still gathering. This is actually you. Mm-hmm. Correspondent on The Daily Show, speaking with some delegates and people that you ran into at the RNC about abortion.
My right ends where my uterus begins.
I guess I'd have to agree with you on that.
Personal liberty is the hallmark of our civilization, no question about that.
Except in cases of abortion.
In case of abortion, exactly.
Say hello to my uterus. You own a little piece of it. Everybody.
Right. Aww.
Do you remember that?
I do. I remember those days. Like I, you know, when I started working at The Daily Show, I've been to every political convention since 2004 now, except for this year. So I do, I mean, they're horrible. Like, it's a nightmare on the ground. You end the day, you're sweaty, your shirt's untied, you're wearing flip-flops, your feet are dirty, you haven't eaten. People, they are an absolute nightmare. Everybody's running around with camera crews. You're just like, your hair's sticking out. They're just terrible. And yet somehow I miss them. I miss gathering with even people I don't really want to talk to. Oh, dear.
Well, we are talking this hour with Samantha Bee. Her show is Full Frontal with Samantha Bee on TBS. And we'll have a lot more when we come back. This is On Point.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Samantha Bee. Her show is Full Frontal on TBS, of course. And before the break, we heard a little bit of Samantha Bee at the 2012 Republican National Convention. And in the spirit of bipartisanship, here is Samantha Bee and Jason Jones covering the 2012 Democratic National Convention for The Daily Show. And Sam and Jason in this clip are really pressing DNC attendees about their claims that Democrats are far more welcoming and inclusive than Republicans.
Who wouldn't you include?
We wouldn't include those beer-toting fakers down in Florida, the Tampa Convention guys.
You know the types.
Pot-bellied.
Church-going.
Small-minded.
Anti-science.
It's a bunch of 70 Sam hillbilly.
Whack job, evangelical, gun nuts.
They don't want to hear a message of difference and of hope.
What can you and I teach these whack jobs about inclusion? You go first.
You can't teach them anything.
Don't have a clue about science. Very questionable on any kind of thought that involves more than two or three sentences.
That's from the 2012 Democratic National Convention. Yes. So is it that the people are just really easily led, or is it easy to get them to tell you the truth about how they really feel?
Well, I think, you know, people are eager to talk about how they, you know, it always, we always, we're asked the question, like, how do you get people to say these things? But really, people are very eager to state their opinions on camera. It's surprising. People are surprisingly eager to do so. I don't think that that has changed one bit. It's just that now we can't actually go do that.
Do you miss the conventions? Because I feel like what we've seen on TV last week, and of course, as we're in the middle of this week with the RNC, has been pretty rich material.
Very rich material. It's more that I'm not sure what I'm really lamenting. I'm not sure what I'm feeling nostalgic for at this moment. I just woke up so discombobulated from watching the whole thing all the way through last night. Like, I woke up feeling so disgusted and so gaslit. And then, you know, I had a cup of coffee or two, and then I kind of like refound my sense of purpose, but I'm not sure. Like, am I really nostalgic for conventions, or am I just nostalgic for people, for crowds of people? It's possible. I have watched a few TV. I think I've watched a zombie movie, and there were just like crowds of people in a stadium, and I was like, look at all the people. They're all together. So maybe that tells you a little bit about where my head is at. It's terrible. Oh, look,
we're
at
all
them
right
all together
there with you.
Fleeing the flesh eating zombies, coming together as a crowd.
I'm curious about, so we had those flashbacks from your Daily Show work, but you have been in American living rooms since, what, 2003 with the Daily Show and with Full Frontal now. And so over that time, do you feel like your comedy has changed, evolved? And if so, how?
Sure. I mean, I think that I don't think that my point of view has particularly changed. I think I've gotten better at demonstrating my point of view. I think I've gotten less nervous to have a point of view. Like, you know, toward the end of my work at The Daily Show, Jon Stewart was always so, so kind and so encouraging about having me lean into my own point of view more. But editorially, it really was his show. And so the show reflected his point of view, which is exactly as it should be. And it's been a great experience, kind of a learning journey, kind of about who I am and what I stand for. And I really have, not that I didn't know that, but you know, as you develop that, and I really have regarded this whole time at Full Frontal, because the show has really existed in this such a tumultuous time of this just wildly terrible administration. So it's been a gift to be able to plant a flag in this time period and say, this is what we stand for. We're not the crazy ones. This is where we are. This is a record of the fact that we were right. And there were people like us. I don't know. That's very, I'm going to make myself cry, but it's good to be a part of that.
So you find a deeper meaning. Where we are in history has allowed you to find a deeper meaning.
Listen, we're still doing hijinks. Like, we're still doing really dumb stuff and like having a lot of and making great jokes and just like being comedy forward. But it is nice. It is nice that when we look back on this experience, we'll go, yeah, we were on the right side of history with this show. We were never on the, we were on the right side of things. I feel good about that. I feel good about that for my kids, that they see that we take a stand. I notice it in my kids even, that they do as well now. They're learning how to do that. They're learning how to learn and learning how to think for themselves. It's good.
Do you think about that every day? Because I do. I mean, I go to bed every night thinking, okay, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, will my kids look back at the work I did during this time and say, she did the right thing? That's what I asked
myself. They will reflect on things that way. It depends on how old they are 10 years from now, because there'll be a long period of time where they think we're all really bad at our jobs. And like, my kids definitely don't think I'm funny. They don't think that what I do really, like on the surface, you would never know that they feel really good about the work that I'm doing. But in small ways, it emerges. Like, my daughter wears her feminist shirt now, and she wears it with or without me. And I'm proud of her, and I'm just proud of how they are in the world and who they are becoming. And I, you know, it's probably more my husband's work than me, but it's good. The independent thought. And listen, not to, you know, we listen to a lot of NPR, quite frankly. We have the news on all the time. We're just consumers of news, and they are consuming that with us, whether they like it or not. And believe me, they usually don't.
If I'm totally honest with you right now, if you ask my daughter, and people do sometimes, like, what do you think of the work that your mom does? Or, what does your mom do? And her response is, she does the blah, blah, blah. Like, that's just it. Like, that's just how she describes
that's
my job.
Great.
So I'm hoping when she's in adulthood, she might like change her opinion a little bit. But anyway, they keep us grounded for sure. They keep us grounded.
They do. There's like, because we have three kids, and sometimes we need them to help us in the back, because there's a few things. Like, we have this light kind of bounce card that you hold up, and it casts a little bit more of a golden light on my skin, which is really nice. I really like it. And So when my daughter holds it out there, like if I'm doing something or if I'm working with a joke or I'm just like trying to deliver it in a funny way and I blow it or something like that, or you hear an airplane goes overhead, or usually if I blow it, you just see her shoulders slump. Like she's so bored and disappointed. It's just like, oh, let me do that again. And she's just like, ugh. You can just feel like a full body, like, oh my God, can you just get it right? This is so boring. Or she'll just sit down like she's holding it and it's taking too long. And she just like sits on the ground, which completely casts the light. It just casts a warm glow on a bush, like at knee level. Gorgeous. She's had enough. She's like, this is not impressive. Can you get me an orange juice? Like, exactly. All right.
I'm hungry.
It's great. Exactly. Yeah. When are you making me a quesadilla? Is this torture almost at completion?
Okay. Well, let's listen back to some more of the show here, some more Full Frontal. I'm going to reach back into the recent archives. This is from June 2017 in a segment called Fantastic Words and Where Not to Find Them. And you and your crew lament words losing their meaning in the Trump administration.
I know words. I had the best words.
He had the best words, and he took them and hid them. The first one to go?
Lies.
Lies.
We looked everywhere but could not find the lost word.
Deliberate misstatement.
Alternative facts.
Unsupported.
Unsubstantiated.
Unverified.
Misstatements of a factual nature.
Unfounded and bogus.
Euphemism.
Euphemism. Sure.
That's from 2017. Other than the president, whose voice is pretty distinctive, here mm-hmm. in there you heard Chris Hayes, Aaron Burnett, Ari Melber, mm-hmm. CNN, a little bit more from CNN. So you put together some journalists in there trying to talk their way mm-hmm. around the issue of lies. Has it gotten mm-hmm. any better, you think, since 2017?
Oh, boy. Well, I think we're still having issues with using real words for things and not skirting around it. Like, I definitely feel it. It feels like we are still just kind of locked in that cycle of not using definitive words for definitive things. It's really disheartening. I mean, it's disheartening. So many of these repetitive patterns, you know, are re-emerging and have been re-emerging. Like, it's awful for me to wake up today and read so much analysis of the First Lady's speech. It's like we have the memory of goldfish. Like, she gives a speech, it goes off without a hitch, that's fine, it was too long, whatever. The woman is a birther, like a confirmed birther. Can we not wake up to a completely different reality every day? Can we just be consistent? Can we have a memory for things that happened in the not so distant past? I don't know. It really bothers me. We talk about it a lot on the show, euphemisms for things. When you can just use the word racism, you can just use the word racism when things are racist. It's really okay. Lots of things are racist, and we should use that word to describe those things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I got all ruffled. I felt my body temperature go up. I started to break a little. Oh my God, a little sweat. I got a little sweat right at the hairline.
Just now?
Drink. Just to cool down.
you sound very smooth even as you're, that's, your,
oh,
your
really?
Ruffledness is, makes oh, you, so, you're still very smooth.
That's
yeah.
nice. That's yeah. good. My pores will tell you a different story.
But the thing is obviously I'll just offer you my view as a journalist. Sure. Here is that there was a reason why a lot of these journalistic conventions existed. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think we are clinging to still clinging to those conventions because rules matter, normalcy matters. Sure. But yes, I completely get that we're in a world where the rules have been broken and normalcy has been shattered. So It's
as though we don't have words.
We're
for the
struggling.
That are happening. Ever, of course. I mean, we really don't have words to describe the thing. Now that we've, you know, words fail us. There's no question. I mean, we do have someone. We do have a president that is so unrestrained. There is no law that he will not break. There is no handshake agreement that he will not break. There is no contract that he won't break. So it has broken everybody's brains. We don't know how to handle him. Perhaps that is the, I mean, and then we come full circle. Perhaps that is the role of satire. We don't have, you know, at a show like Full Frontal, we don't have access to anyone. So we don't have to practice access journalism at all. We don't have to, no one will talk to us, so we can just say whatever we want. And maybe that's just freedom. Maybe that's what makes it special right now. We can say whatever we want. The only thing that can happen is they will shut this show down, which if he wins again, might happen. I mean, that's what Putin would do. Oh, he said it. That's so dreadful. But he did. He shut down that puppet show. Like that was like the first thing he did was shut down satire. So who knows? Who knows?
Well, I mean, I agree. I think that satire has always been a truth-telling machine, I think. Well, it is one of its purposes historically. And earlier I wasn't feeling sorry for myself, like, boohoo, we journalists can't say the president has lied. We can, and we mm-hmm. should more often. Like, I'm not gonna spend time feeling sorry for myself about sure. that. But I do appreciate what you said, that like there is a way of identifying what's really happening that that I think you can do in a much more pointed way. And you bring people in because you're making them laugh at the same time rather than antagonizing them, hopefully.
Well, hopefully. I mean, it is a delivery system for real content too. I mean, we do lots and lots of content. I'm proud of the content that we do. I'm proud of the issues yeah. that we cover, and a great delivery system to hear that information is jokes. Well, I've come full circle yeah. on myself. Now I think we're the greatest. No, I always did. Oh, you convinced me. No, I love what we do. I really love what we do. I love what we do.
Yeah. And you're going to keep doing it for as long as you can?
Yes, of course. Of course. Yes. For as long as we can. What else can we do? Like, what in the world could we do other than this? What are we going to, like... I'd still be doing this. I'd still be taping a show in the forest, even if it wasn't on television, probably. My husband and I would still be making weird videos and just watching them together. I don't yeah. know.
Well, Samantha Bee, host of the Emmy Award-winning Full Frontal with Samantha Bee on TBS and the new podcast, Full Release. It's been so great to talk with you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. It's been a wonderful experience to talk to you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.